guys, this is Jenny Coco here, and I'm back with episode 3 of Bannex Bonnets and Kilts. Welcome back to the show. On today's episode, we recap season 3, episode 3 of Outlander, entitled All Debts Paid, written by Matthew B. Roberts and directed by Brendan Mayer. Okay, so let's get started. I've done a quick recap of this episode already. If you haven't checked it out, it's entitled Quick Recap, I think is what I called it, you know. But this is supposed to be a more detailed review. But I'm not going to spend as much time on this as I had with my previous episodes. I just felt like I got a little too wordy, a little too detailed with the recapping of those shows, giving you a play-by-play of the entire thing. So I'm going to try to summarize a little bit better this time. And I am honing my recap skills as I go, guys, so just bear with me. And we're in this together now, okay? So just bear with me. Okay. All right. So we start this episode with a beautiful title card with, don't ask me what kind of dog this is because I'm not very good with dog breeds, but it's a beautiful black dog, maybe a lab? Black lab? Possibly. I don't know. But it's got long hair and it's, a large breed. It's sleeping under a table, and we scan up to a decorated table, look like decorated for a party, and there is a cake with lots of lit candles on it for apparently a birthday party. I am assuming Brianna's. So it's very festive. So then we open the show back in Boston in 1956. And Claire and Frank are kind of pampering around the breakfast table, getting ready to sit down to a lovely breakfast. Frank is cooking. He's cooking an English breakfast because he's concerned that Brianna is getting a little bit too Americanized. I think she asked for Eggo waffles. That was just too much for Frank. So he's making English muffins or some other English types of things. And Claire is enjoying that as well. They sit down to a nice meal. Claire is really excited because apparently things are going well with her schooling. She decides to ask Frank for a date. Well, she doesn't ask for a date per se. She simply says that she'd like to check out a couple of films. And she makes some suggestions. And Frank says to her that he's already seen these films. And she looks surprised that he's seen them, almost disbelieving, and then it occurs to her that she knows what he means when he says he's seen these films, and she apologizes, and he says, well, I hope you understand, we've discussed this, and it was your idea, essentially, for this to happen. I'm not going to do essentially. I said essentially, I think, in my last couple of episodes, maybe about 40 times. So, you know, if I say essentially again in this episode anymore, you guys can take a shot. We'll play a drinking game with how many times I say essentially in this one. So Claire, basically Frank is telling Claire, we'll replace essentially with basically. Claire is telling, or Frank is telling Claire that, they had discussed this and came to an agreement that he is apparently seeing someone else, and that individual is the person that he is, seeing and going to movies with and entertaining himself with. And she understands, and things get awkward for a moment until Brianna comes downstairs and then breaks the ice between Claire and Frank just a touch. And, of course, we see that Brianna is considerably older now. She is possibly 10 or 11 years old at this point. And so we get to see how things have moved along for Frank and Claire. Now, my thoughts on this first part of the episode is that my thoughts are that Frank and Claire live in separate lives. They have apparently come to an agreement that he will date. I doubt Clarence is dating, but it's understood that she can if she wants to. And they will stay together for Brianna. And, you know, I have had the privilege, since I'm so late with my recap, of listening to a few other, you know, shows. And hearing some of their opinions and also reading some things on Twitter and on social media, Facebook and stuff. And people have had varying opinions about this whole thing. Typically, people are really upset with the writers of the show. At least that's what I've seen. They're kind of upset that they are making it look as though Frank is just a kind of a innocent victim being led along for this ride that this devious woman Claire is taking him on. And it's a departure from the book. And it is, because in the book, Frank is just someone who does what he wants to do, and Claire be damned. That's kind of how he does it. I mean, in some regards, he's okay and understanding, but in other regards, especially when it comes to his personal life and dating, he is just not. He's very selfish about that. And I'm gonna go against what I guess a lot of people believe. And I'm gonna say he has a right to be selfish. I mean, Claire was gone for 3 years. Nobody is thinking about that. Nobody is thinking that this man was abandoned for 3 years. He didn't know that she was gone to another world. Well, not another world, but another time, and couldn't get back to him. That's not what he thought. I mean, he thought that she had abandoned him, had left. And in the book, he carried on with his life. Who wouldn't have? You just kind of move on. You carry on with your life. And she certainly did in the 18th century with Jamie and having a whole full other marriage and a couple of pregnancies. Why do so many people believe that Claire is the only one that can try to get over Frank and move on with Jamie, but he's not supposed to get over her and move on in the 20th century? I don't understand that. So TV Frank is quite different from Book Frank. He's way more accepting and understanding, and people are just so annoyed by it. Not everyone. I'm not one of the ones that's annoyed by it. I don't mind a show being different from the book that the show is based on. I didn't mind it with Game of Thrones. I don't mind it with Outlander. I don't mind it with Walking Dead. I'm a fan of Walking Dead too. Yes, Walking Dead does not follow the comics exactly. There's even characters in The Walking Dead that aren't in the comics. In Game of Thrones, for instance, Tyrion is completely different than he was in the books. Tyrion on the show is a much more palatable person than Book Tyrion. Book Tyrion is a little bit harder to take, I mean, everyone's can you can still relate to Book Tyrion, but Book Tyrion is kind of portrayed sort of as a stereotypical monstrous little gnome. While Sho Tyrion is kind of charismatic and even handsome. And we have crushes on Tyrion. I love Tyrion. So it TV has to sometimes make changes in order to be more palatable to the viewing audience. It's just how it is. So maybe they just thought that making Book Frank into a more until a person to me, okay, I like Sho Frank and the way that they're portraying him because I think making him that really dislikable person that he is in the book would just make you wonder what did Claire ever see in this clown? Because yes, okay, Claire was young. She was, I mean, that's the excuse you can kind of go with, I guess, is that she was young when she met Frank. And she was in her early 20s, and maybe she just thought he was handsome, and that was the extent of her attraction to him. Okay, I can go with that. I've fallen prey to that myself. However, for him to be a complete douche, though, I don't know. That's kind of a reflection on her as well, isn't it? I think it's more, and it makes you wonder what she ever saw in someone like that, and why would she marry them? You know, she was young, but she wasn't that young to date to marry a complete and total jerk who she had nothing in common with, right? So let's give Claire a little bit of credit and say that she would marry a sweet man, a good man, a decent man. So it makes sense to me for Show Frank to reflect that the kind of man that we would think that Claire would marry. You know, so I mean, maybe they do go a little bit overboard with his acceptance of everything she's brought back to him from the 18th century. But I can roll with it. I can get it. So I don't understand why so many people are so upset. I think that they just want Claire and Jamie together, and they just don't like anyone else interfering, even her first husband, who it of no fault of his own just happens to be her husband, you know, that she left behind. But I don't know. I'm speculating. I can't really say what is in other people's mind. I just get confused when I see people getting so angry at Show Frank. Show Frank is Show Frank. Book Frank is Book Frank. Let's separate the two. Pretend they are two different entities and completely disconnected from each other, which they are, honestly, and go on from there. We'll be much happier, I think, if we do it that way. Just my two cents on that. All right, then we flash back in time to Ardsmuir Prison in 1755, and we see, for the first time, Lord John Grey being escorted around the prison by the current governor, who is basically just giving him a tour. The current governor is leaving, and Lord John Grey is taking his place. And the current governor is explaining to Lord John how the system works. He's talking about how this prison only holds Jacobite prisoners from Culloden, and that it's just really a very dank and dark place. There's lots of whiskey, though, or liquor that he can benefit from to kind of get him through. And he talks about that he really won't have a whole lot of things or people to talk to except for maybe his officers. And they go out to the courtyard, and the current governor looks over to this these guys standing next to the wall, and he says, "And one prisoner." And Lord John says, "What prisoner?" And the governor says, "Have you ever heard of Red Jamie Fraser?" And Lord John gets this kind of stunned look on his face, and he goes, "Of course. He was notorious during the war." And the governor says, "Well, we have him. And you know, you can speak with him sometimes. They call him McDo. He's kind of the leader of the prisoners. And he would occasionally have dinner with him and discuss things." Lord John was like, "I don't want to have dinner with a prisoner." But you can tell he kind of wants to, but he doesn't want to admit it. So the governor goes, "Okay, well, whatever suits you." And he's like, "Well, good luck to you." And he leaves, leaving Lord John to stand there, kind of staring after him, and then kind of looking around and taking in his surroundings. Things don't look so great. Now, my thoughts on this, from the books. It is made fairly clear that Lord John was brought here for not the best reason. It's been a while since I've read Voyager. I wished I had done a reread before season three started. I started to do a reread, but I was into so many other books at the time that I didn't take the time to start over with Outlander, because I'm kind of a book freak. And I like reading, and I was just into other books at the time and didn't do a reread of Outlander, which I did with the first two seasons. Before the show started, I reread the first Outlander book, and then before the second season started, I reread Dragonfly and Amber. But I just did not reread Voyager. I wish I had, especially since Voyager is my favorite. But anyway, so I'm forgetting how exactly they handled discussing why he was being sent to Ardsmuir, but it was, I don't know if it was before, I don't know if it was kind of discussed before he got a tour and, you know, he was starting out there, or if it was after. But at any rate, At some point in the book, it is made known that he was sent to Ardsmuir for a reason, and it was not a good reason because it's like a punishment. It's not a good thing to be sent to this place. And, so he had done something and he was being punished for it. So then the prisoners are escorted back inside the prison because they were out in the yard. And now they're going back inside. Jamie is meandering along with the other prisoners. By the way, he's the only one that is in chains. The former governor had explained to Lord John that they kept him in chains because he was the notorious Red Jamie, and for some reason that means that he needs to be chained at all times. And by the way, he's been there for 3 years, chained all 3 years. So anyway, like I said, they're meandering along, going back into the prison. Jamie goes along this area where he passes by a lot of the guys, the men, the prisoners. One of them hands him something, says, "For you, McDo," and he takes it and keeps on going. He ends up sitting in this area at the wall or near the wall, and you hear a voice of someone coming from behind the wall, and the voice says, "So you met the new governor?" And I immediately recognize the voice. It is Murtaugh. Everyone is delighted. Yay, Murtaugh is here. Yes, we are all excited. We are all excited to see Murtaugh. Murtaugh is the man. We love us some Murtaugh. So anyway, it turns out that Murtaugh has survived Culloden and he ended up in Ardsmuir prison. It is not explained how he got there. Just that he was there. I wish I knew the backstory. Maybe they'll get to it at some point during the season. I don't know. It'd be nice to know, though. I'd love to know how Murtaugh survived. What happened? What is his story? What happened after he and Jamie parted ways on the battlefield? Because if you recall, he and Jamie met up on the battlefield at one point, and Murtaugh stabbed someone who was getting ready to attack Jamie. Then they went off in different directions, and we never saw Murtaugh again until now. So what has been going on with him? I am dying to know. I don't know if anybody else wants to know, but I do. Anyway, as they sit there, they are discussing the new governor, and Jamie says he doesn't recognize him, but the name sounds familiar or something along those lines, but he can't place him. Now, I think I'm still not, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'm still not clear if he's really not placing him or if he's just lying to Murtaugh. I don't know. But at any rate, that's what he tells Murtaugh. Murtaugh says, "Who cares? They all look alike." And Jamie says, "Well, they think the same thing about us." He said, and Murtaugh says, and by the way, Murtaugh is sickly. He's coughing a lot and he's kind of lying down and he's holding on to a scrap of tartan. And he says, "Well, they'd know well enough if they let us wear our tartans." And Jamie said, "Put that away. You know it's outlawed. You get in trouble if they caught you with it." So Murtaugh, takes his very scraggly, very shabby, very dirty little piece of tartan, poor man. And he tucks it away somewhere. He's reminiscing about the good old days, apparently. It's very sad, very sad. But anyway, they continue on talking, and Jamie tells Murtaugh that he's got, because Murtaugh is coughing a lot and he's not well, and Jamie pulls out some kind of plant that he had gotten from somewhere. And he says that this will help, maybe ease your cough a little bit. We take off the heads and squish the leaves or something like that and make some sort of medicine, I guess, for him. And then he starts to think a little bit and he says, "I learned the trick from a lass I once knew who knew a fair amount about healing." Murtaugh staring at him. So apparently, there's no, the person whose name shall not be named thing going on with Claire. Kind of, well, like Voldemort from Harry Potter. They will not speak her name, or Jamie will not. Apparently that's too painful for him. Now, what do I think of this? Of course, I am so delighted to see Murtaugh, number one. Number two, to talk about how this went in the book. In the book, and by the way, in case you guys haven't noticed, I do plan to, as we go along, kind of compare things to how it went in the book. Since I am a book reader, I don't plan to spoil anything. I know last episode, I kind of said a couple of things that were going to be happening or possibly will be happening later, but I was vague. I didn't get into a lot of detail, so I hope no one's upset by that. But yeah, I did mention a couple of things. I will try and not do that ever again. But yeah, I did do that in the last episode. I will try not to do that again. At any rate, but as I go and as the show airs, I will do comparisons to how certain scenes went with the book. And in this instance, of course, there was no Murtaugh in the book. And Jamie basically was, you know, just being friends with his clansmen that were in the prison with him. There were several people in the prison with him that he was friendly with. I don't know if we ever, I don't remember if we got names. Probably we did, and I'm just not remembering. But yeah, I do know that there were people in the prison that he was friendly with. I remember in the prison that his shackles were a real, just a distressing thing for him. At one point, he you know, talked about how the shackles would tell on him if he ever decided he wanted to kind of, how do I put this delicately? the shackles would tell on him if he wanted to get, have a little solo performance, you know, like Claire did in episode 2 when Frank was asleep and she was thinking on Jamie. Well, you know, let's just be realistic. You know, Jamie's in prison and has been in prison for 3 years, and he is still a man, still red-blooded and young. So, yeah, occasionally, you know, the nights got a little too lonely. And he said he would have to wait until the men were asleep, and hopefully no one was awake, and he would, you know, try to get his little solo thing on, and hopefully no one would hear the chains rattling, because the chains would be his tail. And he said if they did hear the chains rattling, they would ignore it, because McDoo just needed a little alone time. So, and I know they can't really get into that in the story and in the show, but I don't know. Maybe I was kind of hoping they would kind of throw something like that in, because they did do it with Claire. Why not with Jamie? Hello. Instead of him just mashing up plants and just not speaking her name. Anyway, I'm being silly. I will move on. So anyway, the next scene is Lord John summoning Jamie to let Jamie know that he had heard from the previous governor that they had an arrangement, that he would be the spokesperson for the prisoners. Jamie said, yeah. And so Lord John says, I would like to continue that. They bring in his food, and he's getting ready to sit down to eat. Lord John, that is. And a rat runs through the room, and Lord John is like, good God. Are there lots of rats around here? What about in the prison cells? And they say, yeah, there's lots of rats in the prison cells. So Lord John says, I want a cat put in every prison cell. And he sits down to eat, but he notices that the Jamie and there's another prisoner who had brought in his food, they were kind of looking at each other. And Lord John's like, what's the problem? And Jamie said, with respect, sir, I don't think the men would appreciate a cat taking all their rats. Lord John was like, well, surely you're not eating them. Jamie says, if they're lucky enough to catch one. And then he says to Lord John, I don't know what you did to be brought here, but I sure hope it was bad enough for you to deserve it. So then Lord John dismisses Jamie, and that's the end of that scene. Then we flash forward to 1958. Claire is having a party with all her friends, colleagues, and her much, well, her 12-year-old, I think now, daughter Bree. She's aged a couple of years. It's 2 years later. And they're celebrating her graduation from college. She and her new best buddy, Joe Abernathy, the black gentleman, are showing off their diplomas and taking pictures. Brianna is taking the pictures. And everybody is just happy and fellowshipping and having a good old time until the doorbell rings. When the doorbell rings, Claire answers it, and it's a attractive young woman. But the young woman looks surprised to see Claire, and her smile is frozen on her face. Apparently, she was expecting someone else to answer the door. And Claire says, may I help you? The woman doesn't know what to say. She's like, I, she doesn't know what to say. So then Frank shows up behind Claire, sees a woman. The woman looks at Frank. Frank looks at her. Claire looks at the woman, looks back at Frank, looks back at the woman. Oh, okay. I see what this is. So Claire goes back into the living room with her guests and say, "Hey, let's go now, people. We should go to the restaurant, even though we're early. We can sit at the bar if the tables aren't ready." So they file past Frank and his girlfriend. Probably a really intense moment here. And later on, Claire's in the living room drinking, and Frank shows up stumbling drunk, and Claire blows up on him, saying that you had that woman come here deliberately to embarrass me in front of my colleagues. At first, Frank tries to play it off like, no, that's not it. You took the car. She just came to pick me up. It's not a big deal. Keep your voice down because Brianna will hear you." She's like, "I know you did that on purpose." And he's like, "Well, maybe I did. Maybe I wanted you to get a taste of your own medicine." So, let's just summarize this because, frankly, I don't want to get into the details of this one. Frank has a girlfriend. Claire was unhappy. Frank was supposed to be discreet. Claire is upset that he maybe possibly did this deliberately so that she would see how it felt to be humiliated in front of her colleagues, because apparently Frank has felt humiliated in front of his colleagues with Claire and her, really kind of living as a single woman and not being happily married like he would like them to be. As I guess as the years pass, Frank is frustrated because he's got a woman now and he wants to be with her probably, but he's stuck with Claire. And I have seen other people on social media and a few other podcasts that I've listened to say that they feel like Frank is in the wrong here, and that he should not have brought that woman to the house, which I agree. Never, ever, ever bring your boo thing to the house, especially not in front of your kid. That's just, why would you do that, Frank? That was a dick move. So if he did do that deliberately, yes, I do agree, that's a dick move. But I can understand and sympathize with him being upset with how things are going in his marriage. Yes, he agreed to this marriage of convenience where he knew that Claire was in love with another man, and he wanted to try to put this together and make it work, and him raising the child. And frankly, Claire is fortunate that he was willing to do that, because in those days, trying to be a single mother was not like it is today. Okay, today, single mothers can do it all. But back then, single mothers were pariahs. I mean, they really were. They were treated very poorly. And even if Claire was a smart woman and can go to school and do a lot of things for herself, having that support of Frank really helped her to become who she became, that doctor. I'm not so sure how easy it would have been for her to do that without Frank's support, but she had it. And I think she was a bit ungrateful. I'm gonna just be honest. I'm sorry. And I know some of you are not gonna like what I'm saying here, but I'm just being real. And yes, I am separating the book from the show because I know in the book it was different, but the show is a different story, at least when it comes to this particular part of the story. Frank is a good dude, okay, in the show. Claire didn't give Frank a fair chance here. And I know it's hard for her to do. She's in love with another man, and she doesn't want to betray his memory or betray in her mind, or maybe she just can't because she's not built that way. She has no, at least not the kind of love that Frank deserves when it comes to loving your husband. That part of her heart belongs to Jamie. I get that. Trust me, I do. I don't know. This is a tough one. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm gonna stop talking about it now. I'm just gonna say that I can see Frank's frustration, and yes, I can see Claire's too. It's just an all-around messed up situation. What I'm not going to agree to, though, is that Frank is in any way a bad guy in this story, at least no more than Claire. He's no more a bad person than Claire is.
in the show, okay? And in fact, I'll even go a little further and say Claire's a little bit rougher than Frank is in the show. Yes, the whole woman coming to the apartment thing was a bad move. It was not cool for Frank to do that. And he did get petty. But I think Frank deserves to get a little petty because Claire's been petty. Okay, Claire's been petty. Okay, that whole thing in front of the fireplace when she stopped the sex in the last episode, talking about if you're not in the mood, just say so. That was petty. That was a petty line. That was a line, and it was a petty line. So Frank just got his petty line with "Green ain't your color, baby." When he said that, when she was acting, like she was acting jealous, and he said, "Green ain't your color." Look, I giggled. Yes, I did. I laughed. I was like, "Yes, I sure did," because I thought Frank deserved that dig. He deserved it. She deserved to get that dig, and he deserved to deliver it. So, okay, neither one of them are right. They're both wrong. They're both miserable. And it's pretty clear that this marriage is over and they're just in it for the child. And yes, I do get why Frank stays, because he doesn't want to lose his kid. This child, he's been there since birth, is as much his as it is Claire's at this point. Okay, yes, it is her blood child, but he is helping her raise that baby, and he is as much her father as Claire is her mother. And we all can see that Brianna loves her father more than she loves her mother. Okay, I won't say love more. She's closer to her father than she is her mother. So, for all of those of you saying that, he couldn't take. Anyway, I'm not gonna skip to that. That's a little bit later. We'll get into that later. But at this point in the show, I'm a little bit Team Frank, a little more than Team Claire. Sorry. That's just where I am at right now. So anyway, we make a quick trip back in time, back to 1755, where this elderly gentleman is strolling along outside the prison. He looks like he's hallucinating, disheveled, maybe mumbling to himself. Some prison guards who are, I think, bringing a new prisoner to the prison run into him, and they ask him who he is and where he's going, and he's mumbling stuff. He's not making any sense. And he says something about French gold, which everybody has been looking for, by the way. The French gold that was supposed to have been left for the Bonnie Prince, I guess, and no one ever found. So anyway, one of the prison guards says, "French gold? Did he say French gold?" He looked at the prisoner. The prisoner put his head down like, "I don't know what you're talking about." So then they say, "Get this man and let's take him to the prison." So they took him to the prison, and later on, the governor summons Jamie once again and informs Jamie that they have found this gentleman along the road. He's sick, near death, but he is rambling about French gold, and you know how important that is that we find this French gold, if there is any. And he wants Jamie to interpret because Jamie is multilingual and knows all kinds of languages, and this old man is only speaking French and Gaelic, which, of course, Jamie speaks both languages. And Jamie refuses. He says, "No, I'm an interpreter. I'm a prisoner, not an interpreter." And the governor, John Gray, he says, "Well, what if I agreed to take your chains off?" So then we see Jamie's chains dropped to the ground. His shackles are finally gone, and his wounded wrists are finally free to breathe. And Jamie says, "Well, I'm going to need a little bit more than just this. I also want some medicine and blankets for the prisoners." Lord John's like, "I can't do that. We don't have enough medicine and blankets." And Jamie was like, "Well, if you can't do that, then just forget it. Just put the chains back on. I don't care." And the governor was like, "Look, I would do it if I could, but I can't. We just don't have the supplies for that." And Jamie was like, "Okay, well, what about just one prisoner? My kinsman, Murtaugh Fitzgibbons." So the governor, thinks on this and looks like he would agree to that. But then we flash forward to some more Claire and Frank stuff, and I already talked about that, so we won't go back into it again. So then we're back at the prison after Claire and Frank do their thing. Basically, telling each other how much they hate each other now. So now we're back at the prison.
where Jamie is trying to talk to the elderly gentleman. The elderly gentleman is rambling on about things, referencing Colm and Ellen, Jamie's mother, and the Silkies, which I think his father was thought to be a Silky because of his silky black hair at one point, and Ellen, his mother, had married the Silky, Jamie's father. So I don't know, man. He was just talking. So anyway, he dies. Lord John comes and asks Jamie, what did he say? Jamie said he was just rambling. He didn't say anything that was of any importance. Although he did, of course, ramble about a white witch, which, of course, is what Claire was referred to at one point in Paris. And that would, of course, intrigue Jamie. Jamie thought there might be something meaningful behind it. But he did not tell John Grey about this, of course. John Grey said, I think you're holding back on us. He says, no, I'm a man of my word. If I knew something, I would tell you. So John Grey is like, okay, well, you know what? We'll talk again on this. And he leaves. And that's the end of that scene. So then we flash forward again to, oh my God, what year was it? 1960 something, probably by this point. Even though it doesn't say on the screen what year it is, we can determine that it is approximately 1962, because Brianna is blowing out the candles, and this is from the title card, apparently, you know, where they had the birthday cake and the title card. And she's sitting at this very festive table, and we see the dog walking by that had been asleep in the title card, and she's blowing out the candles, and Claire says, and she says, should I make a wish? Bree says this as she before she blows out the candles, and Claire says, well, as long as you don't wish for a car, because you're not getting one. And Frank says, wish away. You know, because of course Frank is probably going to give her the car. And we deem from this scene, as Claire rolls her eyes at Frank, that Frank is, you know, the doting dad, does everything for Bree, which is probably why Bree is closer to him. Because, of course, right when he says that, she looks at him and gives him a beaming smile. So we can determine that Claire is the disciplinarian, probably, and Frank is the father that just does everything from his for his little girl, which of course would lead an immature young woman or child to think that, well, my daddy does everything I want, and my mom's a mean old hag, and I hate my mom and love my dad. So that's probably contributing to Brianna's closeness to her father and maybe distance from her mother. So, yes, in this instance, I will say Frank is being a dick. Okay, you happy? Cool. Okay, so we flash back to Ardsmuir Prison, where Murtaugh is drinking some of Jamie's fake Claire medicine because he doesn't really know what he's doing. Oh, well. You know, I won't say he doesn't know. I'm sure he learned some things, but you know, Murtaugh is complaining about how gross it tastes. But he's drinking it, and obviously it must be helping on some level, because we do at least learn that Murtaugh has been in this prison since Culloden, which means that Jamie has been in the prison for 3 years, but Murtaugh has been in it for nearly 10. Because Jamie spent 6 years in the cave, 3 years in the prison, that's a total of 9 years. So Murtaugh has been in the prison this entire time. That is nearly 10, or right at 10 years. Poor Murtaugh. Holy crap. That is just, yeah. And for him to have been sick the entire time, yeah, that he's still alive is quite impressive. Almost as impressive as Jamie bleeding for more than 24 hours and still living. So anyway, they start discussing the old rambling man who had been speaking about you know, Ellen and Silkies and the White Witch. And Jamie mentions it to Murtaugh asks what the old man was saying, and Jamie says mostly rambling, but he did mention a White Witch. And Murtaugh, of course, is familiar that the White Witch had been known as Claire. And he says, do you think he was talking about... And he says, no, Jamie, quickly, before Murtaugh even thinks of saying her name. And Murtaugh says, you know, I think of her now and then, and the burn that she was carrying. And Jamie says, well, you shouldn't, because it just brings you heartache. And Murtaugh was like, well, can I at least pray them safe? And the guard comes to take Jamie again to see Lord John. And right before he leaves, he says to Murtaugh, yes, that's fine. So then Jamie once again is summoned to Lord John Grey's chamber. And he sees that Lord John is standing at a set table for dinner and asks Jamie to dine with him. And Jamie says, if you think that, you know, giving me this, you know, food is going to loosen my tongue, you might as well think again, because I told you all I know. So Lord John was like, no, this is just a pleasantry like you did with the previous governor. And it's so that we can develop a rapport with each other that'll benefit the both of us. So Jamie said, fine, especially when he saw the meal being brought in and he was thinking, this looks pretty delicious. So, but then he says, you know, I'll do this, but I would like a favor. I would like you to allow the men to set up snares outside the prison walls to catch game. And the Lord John was like, no, are you kidding? Give you guys weapons? And Jamie says, no, these are not weapons. They're just snares to catch small game, and we would keep, you know, whatever meat we catch. And we can also pick plants, watercress. And Lord John was like, watercress? What do you want with watercress? Jamie said to eat it. He says, eating green plants prevents you from getting scurvy. And Lord John was like, who told you that? And Jamie says, my wife. Lord John says, you're married. And Jamie says, she's gone. So Lord John was like, okay, well, let's just sit down and eat. And you can, you know, do the game thing, whatever. He said that that was fine. So they sit down to eat. Lord John was saying, we're having pheasant and wine sauce. And they sit down, and Lord John serves Jamie a piece of the pheasant. Jamie takes a bite, and his face just kind of melts into this sweet smile that I'm sure he hasn't probably allowed to curve his lips for about 3 years, probably. No, about maybe closer to 10, since before Culloden, because I don't think Jamie was smiling all that much while he was in that cave either. So, and then he says, this is delicious, and he says what it is, because Jamie, you'll forget, you know, since he's been living in a cave for 6 years and in prison for 3. You forget that Jamie was once a gentleman living in Paris in a giant mansion with his wife, and had servants and ate fine food and drank fine liquor. So, you know, he knows a little bit something about good eating. So as he's eating this pheasant, he describes the food, the sauce or whatever that it's in. And he asks Lord John if that's what it was. And Lord John looks at it, and he looks at Jamie. He's like, psh, I don't know, hell. So they have a very positive moment here. All right, I haven't discussed a lot of what I think about what I have seen thus far. Well, of course, what I think of Claire and Frank, that's over, you know, and now they're just kind of, you know, going through the motions at this point, taking Brianna to her adulthood before, you know, they just finally say, you know, to hell with all this. So, you know, their story is just meandering along uselessly. The real story is, of course, with Jamie in the prison. And what I think of that is that Lord John is putting the moves on. Hey, what can you say? In the book, it is made, I think, a little bit clearer that, and even though we are coming upon the notion that Lord John is actually probably not just being a governor to Jamie, he's actually maybe feeling something more. In the book, I think it's made a little bit more evident, even at this point, that Lord John might have something more that he's thinking about Jamie other than just him being a prisoner and wanting to, you know, get information out of him and stuff. He's actually developing some feelings, so that is what I believe is going on also in the show. But it's just not being relayed as obviously. So then, you know, we flash a little forward to Jamie being back in the cell with his men. and describing the lovely meal that he had had with the governor, and describing every bite of food to the men as if telling them some sort of story, and they're all gathered around listening to it with bated breath, enjoying the savory meal through Jamie's description, I guess, which is quite sweet in one way and very sad and tragic in another. But then we flash forward again to the next day, I guess, where the men are finally allowed to, obviously some time has to have passed because they set the snares, and the snares have already been set up. So now they're going out and checking the snares to see if they have caught anything. And at one point, as they are standing there, a couple of the prisoners dart out of line, running out to check their traps to see if they've caught anything. The redcoat soldiers are a little bit startled at how quickly they run off, and they run after them a little bit, have their guns on them, and tell them, all right, be careful, don't do anything funny. So they're distracted, and while they are distracted, Jamie and two other prisoners run in the opposite directions very quickly. It's kind of funny because they play this fiddle music while they're doing it. And Jamie is just, I think he's like a foot at least taller than both of these guys. So it's kind of funny in a way as he runs off, because he almost looks a little goofy as he's running. But I found it really cute because he's quick. Jamie, I must say, Sam, Jamie, however you want to put it, he is a quick guy. He can run. I noticed this too, even during the Battle of Culloden, when they were charging and Jamie was running. He's a quick runner, because he's like 6'3", 6'4". That's a pretty big dude. So for him to be that tall and to be that agile and that quick on his feet is impressive. So anyway, when Jamie runs off in one direction with the opposite direction with the two prisoners, as the red coats are distracted, he runs and jumps into a hole that had been pre-dug. Probably, of course, when the prisoners were setting up their snares, they dug a hole for Jamie. And he goes, jumps in this hole, and the two prisoners that were with him cover him with some pre-cut mounds of grass. And then they run and get back in line, and Jamie is there hiding. That's how he gets his escape on. So the next scene, we see Lord John saying he's escaped, and one of the officers explaining, yes, sir. So they go and they try to look for Jamie. While they're looking, they speak at one point that it looks like he swam to an island that was way off from the shore of the prison, there's really no other way off this island. They're surrounded by water, so they know that he really can't go too far. So they said, you know, if he stays out there, he's eventually going to die. So there's not much that he can do out there. So they know that, I mean, the prison is set up in a way where you just don't have a whole lot of options as far as escape is concerned. So a little bit later, Lord John is outside the prison wall taking a piss. And he's snuck up on by Jamie. Jamie covers his mouth with his hand, you know, reminds him that he did know who he was, or at least informs him that he did know who he was and did recognize him, even though it was understood or thought that previously he did not remember who he was. And then he stands off from him after taking his sword from him. Jamie stands off from Lord John Grey after having taken his sword from him, and he says, you remember what you promised me? You promised to kill me. He gets on his knees and basically offers himself up to be killed by Lord John. Lord John takes his sword, puts it to Jamie's neck, and it looks like he might be getting ready to kill him. But then he says, I don't kill unarmed prisoners. And of course he puts his sword away, and that's it for that. All right, my thoughts and feelings about this. Lord John is a by-the-books kind of guy. He doesn't do things, you know, without it being done in honor and, you know, with merit. That is something that is very true to the Lord John from the books. Lord John from the books was a man of honor, and he just did things, you know, honorably. That's just who he is. A lot of people from, you know, the, you know, social media, whatever, have mixed feelings about Lord John. Some people think he's, you know, a good guy, honorable, because probably most of those people are familiar with him from the books or what have you, and maybe just have a good impression from him from the show thus far, which I don't see why you wouldn't. But some people don't trust him, don't think that he's really a good guy. Is he? Is he really? Do we know? Well, I guess you'll have to, you know, find out with everyone else who is not a book reader. But my impression, even if I hadn't read the books, is basically that Lord John is he's a good dude. And I'm assuming they're going to keep him that way in the show, although the show is different from the books. Okay, you guys, I'm getting kind of tired because it is late. I'm going to try to wrap this up in the next 10 minutes or so. So let's keep it pushing. Okay, so after this whole interesting scene, we flash to Jamie and Lord John kind of walking outside the prison. And Jamie explains to Lord John that the ramblings of the old man were actually ramblings, but there was some stuff that did have some meaning to him that had to do with his wife. He thought his wife might have been somehow connected to this area that the old man described to him. So that's where he went when he escaped. And nothing there was found that had to do with his wife, but he did find something. He showed him some kind of jewel. To be honest with you, I don't exactly know what all this was, and you know, referring to. Maybe I need to watch the show again to get a better meaning of what it was. And I know that I read about it in the book too, but and right now I'm kind of foggy in the brain too because I'm sleepy. So, you know, I'm sure some of you can take more meaning from it than I did, but I didn't catch much from this. And then we flash forward again with them being in the prison. And some guards come in and they point out Murtaugh Fitzgibbons. Jamie's like, what do you want with Murtaugh? And they say that Lord John ordered that this man, the doctor, come in and treat your kinsman. So Jamie allows this to happen. So Murtaugh starts getting doctor's treatments because Lord John allowed it to happen. So that's great. So later we see Jamie and Lord John. Well, before that, we flash forward again to Claire and Frank at Brianna's high school graduation, and they're in the audience sitting next to each other, cheering her on as she receives her diploma. Happy moment, but now we have a timeline of Brianna now being, of course, maybe 17, 18 years old and graduating from high school, so another year or so has passed since her birthday. Flashback again to Jamie within the prison. Lord John and he are playing chess. They start talking about things, including that Murtaugh has been receiving treatments for a few months and is doing much better. They start talking about Jamie's wife. Well, Jamie tells Lord John that it turns out that his wife was the person that he had been with when they had seen each other before, when Lord John was 16 years old and attacked Jamie while he was trying to take a pee break. If you're familiar with season 2, then you know what happened with all of that, so I don't have to get into that. So when Lord John gets that bit of information from Jamie, and then Lord John says, so you must have loved her very much, and Jamie says her name was Claire. And so he finally says Claire's name, you know, and you know, he smiles as if, you know, the memory of her doesn't maybe pain him so much, but maybe is a happy one. And then Lord John relays some personal information to Jamie about someone that he lost at Culloden, making it pretty plain that this was someone who wasn't just a friend, but probably, well, not probably, but was maybe, not maybe, was a lover. He doesn't say that in so many words, but he makes it pretty clear in how close he was and how his brother was embarrassed by this relationship that he had with this other man. And then Lord John puts his hand on Jamie's hand and says he is sorry for his loss of his wife. But as he's touching Jamie's hand, he is a bit too intimate and strokes his hand just a bit. And Jamie goes from, you know, being okay with this little private combo to, if you don't move your hand, I will kill you. So Lord John moves his hand very slowly. He's, you know, mortified. And Jamie gets up to leave. And Lord John has tears that stream from his eyes. So, of course, we are to determine from this that Lord John has most definitely developed feelings for Jamie. And is pretty horrified that those feelings have been rebuffed. But, I mean, how could he think anything else would happen? You know, okay, yes, Jamie didn't have a big reaction to Lord John being gay. So what? That doesn't mean he wants you, dude. It just means that, you know, you're gay, so what? Big deal. Jamie is an open-minded fellow. Has always, you know, been portrayed as open-minded. Jamie in the books is open-minded. Jamie on the show is open-minded. That's one of the things that I love about Jamie. For him to be an 18th century Scotsman, he's quite a progressive. So, I mean, that's what all of us love about him, right? He's a progressive, free-thinking, wonderful guy. But it doesn't mean he want to get with you, okay? And I've heard some podcasters say that Jamie's rejection of Lord John didn't have anything to do with Lord John being gay, but maybe of Lord John being too aggressive or something along those lines, or Jamie not being ready. No, Jamie is just not gay. And it does have to do with Lord John being gay and Jamie not being gay. A straight man is not going to be interested in getting with a gay man. Even if that straight man is okay with that gay man being gay, and he's not homophobic, it doesn't mean that he is open to a relationship with that gay man. Okay, sometimes the progression with some of y'all can get a bit much. No, I think he rebuffed Lord John because he's not interested in getting with a dude. And it's okay for him to not be interested in that because he's heterosexual. That's a sexuality too, guys. Heterosexuality is also a sexuality that should be respected by people of other sexualities. Okay, if you want me to respect your sexuality, respect mine too. I'm good with you. You know, do your thing, whatever you like. Love is love. But don't expect me to roll with you just because you touched my hand. I'm not, no, no. Sorry. You know, you cool and all, but no. All right, so anyway, flash forward to the 1960s somewhere. We're not getting the dates anymore on screen, but it's sometime after Brianna's high school graduation. Claire is sitting in her living room contemplating something. Frank shows up, looks at her, and says, "Tough surgery?" She goes, "Yeah, they're all tough." He says, "Well, you know, that's the life of a doctor." You know, they're making small talk, in other words. And he says, I'd like to talk to you. I'm thinking about going to England and taking Brianna." And she's like, "Oh, okay. Well, when are you thinking about going?" He says, "Well, I've actually been offered a job at Cambridge." And Claire's like, "A job at Cambridge? Okay, well, what am I supposed to do? My job is here. My life is here." Frank's like, "I'm not asking you to go. I want a divorce." And she's like, "Okay." And he's like, "Look, there are great universities in England." And she's like, "Oh, you think about taking my daughter? Oh, no, that's not happening." So they get into this bickering battle and fight, and he's like, look, Bran is a grown woman. She can make her own decisions. I think she'd probably choose to go with me. That's what he's implying. He didn't say that in so many words. But as we have already discussed, you know, Brianna seems to have a closer relationship with him, and he believes that she would choose to go with him. And he's probably right. She probably would choose to, because she's a kid. You know, she would make that selfish decision because kids are selfish. At any rate, Claire's like, well, if you think about taking my daughter, you know I'm going to tell the judge about adultery because you've been committing it. And he's like, be reasonable. He's like, she's a grown woman. You know, I just want a wife that loves me, who truly loves me. And then he looked at her because he said he was going to marry his girlfriend, his boo thing. And then he says to her, you know, with a little time, do you think you would ever have forgotten Jamie? And she says that amount of time doesn't exist. So he's like, well, there's my answer. So he leaves. He gets his keys and leaves. And then the phone rings, and Claire gets a call from the hospital saying that she has to report for surgery, and she leaves to do that. Jump forward, and Claire's at the hospital talking to the relative of someone I guess she's just operated on, telling him it'll be okay. He just needs to be patient and see what happens. They hug. Then she looks down the hall and sees Joe Abernathy approaching her with a very grim look on his face. He tells her that there's been an accident and it's Frank. She goes running down the hall and sees Frank laid up on a slab with a sheet draped across him, and he is dead. And they play this very melancholy music as she professes that she always loved him, that he was her first love. Now, my opinion of this particular scene is that Frank was kind of just tossed aside like so much trash. I mean, it's very unceremonious death. And yes, it was the same way in the book. I mean, in the book, he was gone after the argument, just like in the show. And that's how it went down. But I don't know. I guess because Tobias has gotten so much love in this show for these past three seasons, I kind of expected something a little bit more glorious, but nope. He was just kind of there one minute and gone the next. And I'm still tripping over how he was in a car accident that was bad enough to kill him, but he was lying there on that slab without a scratch on him. I guess it was all internal. Because he was still looking pretty as he lay there, looking like he was just sleeping peacefully. And she said her goodbyes, gave him a little kiss, and she walked out of the room. And barely shed she shed a couple of tears, yeah, but, you know, she didn't seem that broken up about it. But, okay, Frank is gone. Rest in peace, Frank. And our last scene. As we flash back to the 1700s. Is of the prison being closed and all of the prisoners being walked out and led away, and Jamie and Murtaugh, they're in the line with the prisoners getting ready to leave also, but then they pull Jamie out of line and pull him over to the side, and they explain that the prisoners are going to be taken to the colonies because, you know, that's the only other option they have. The colonies, of course, is early America. And Murtaugh and Jamie keep looking at each other because they're being separated. And so Jamie and Murtaugh are being separated again. But at least Murtaugh is healthy again. He's walking. He doesn't seem to be all sickly anymore. So the doctor's visits helped at least to rebuild his strength. So at least there's that. But they're being separated again. And I hate that. But something tells me, well, I won't say anymore. Anyway, Jamie has to be led off by Lord John Grey to go somewhere else. He wants to know where he's going, but no one tells him, at least not right now. Basically, Lord John is on a horse, and Jamie has a rope that is tied to the horse's saddle that is also tied to his wrists, and he has to trot along behind the horse as they take this journey. And they're traveling for days, and finally, Lord John says, it's been days, you have to talk to me. Jamie says, this is slavery and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it turns out that Lord John has taken Jamie to a house somewhere where a duchess, not a duchess, a duke or somebody lives. And Jamie is going to be an indentured servant, a stable hand at this place. And this is the best thing that Lord John has to offer him next to sending him to the colonies, which he didn't want to do apparently, and or giving him his freedom, which he could not do either. So Jamie asked him, why are you doing this? And Lord John explains that this is me giving you your life back. Hope you use it well. Jamie says, your brother already gave me my life. And Lord John says, that was more of a family name. This is for me. And so he says, let me take you down to the house so you can start your life as an indentured servant. So that's where the story ends, with them going down the hill to the house where Jamie will now be working for this duke. My thoughts on the episode as a whole are that it's a great episode. I enjoyed the whole Murtaugh reveal. I enjoyed the whole Lord John introduction. Lord John is very popular amongst a lot of the book fans. He even has his own book series. I've never read any of Lord John's books. I was just never that into Lord John. I thought he was a great character for the books, for what he was, but not so much that I want to read his own books. Maybe I will one day, because everybody explains that if you read his books, then you get more of a backstory about him, and it explains a lot about how he acts in the book with Outlander, in the Outlander books, because he does act a certain way. He falls in love with Jamie fairly quickly and fairly just thoroughly. I'm wondering if maybe he's just got a certain kind of thing with big redheaded guys. I don't know. Maybe that's revealed in the books, his books. I don't know. But it is made pretty clear in the show at this point. I'm not giving any spoilers. This is not a spoiler, because it's already been revealed in the show that he has a very strong affection for Jamie. So anyway, guys, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this show. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sorry that I was starting to kind of fade out towards the end, but it is late, and I'm trying to get this thing recorded and posted before midnight so that I won't have been made a liar saying that I was going to get this up on Wednesday, because I have a job. I don't know if all the podcasters out there have jobs. I know some of them do, but I have a job where I work a lot of late hours, and this was one of those days where I did that, and I still wanted to get this podcast out before it was Thursday so that I can actually get it up by Wednesday like I promised. And I am on Central Standard Time, in case any of you East Coasters want to call me a liar. It is still 11:30 where I live. All right. Thanks, guys. I will catch you next time, and can't wait for episode 4. We'll be recapping that one, hopefully a much sooner than I did this one, so that I can get it out early on a Wednesday instead of late. Okay. All right, guys. Take care. Have a good night.